So, no, my family is not from Tobago, but like I was trying to say it to the last caller, and I feel like I need to make it because you're the second caller that would have called in. I would never lump, and I don't lump any community or any person or any country in one. So what I've been saying has nothing to do with seeing the Bielan as less than anywhere else, or seeing any school in the Bielan or any community as less than, as not sufficient. So the Bielan is no one from Bielan is more insignificant than someone who comes from the Heights and Terraces or any other community. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that there are communities in Barbados that we associate with specific behaviors. Like, there are communities that are seen as persons coming from these communities are set to go down a specific path. We have stereotypes in Barbados that we believe in and that we believe in strongly, and it's starting to change. And there are persons who come from these communities who do exceptionally well. I would never, ever say otherwise. But what I'm saying is that there, once again, there are communities that we view in a specific way, and we need to combat that by providing spaces and forums and platforms and community clubs and workshops for young people who come from specific communities to be able to have the same access, the same quality education, the same quality services, the same developmental programs that would allow for them to be able to better themselves. And I say this not only because I grew up in specific communities, but also because we do a lot of youth work in other communities and have engagement with people from other communities and have spoken to other persons. And that is the sentiment. A lot of persons don't feel like they get the same quality of services as other persons. It's not to lump the Bielan into a bad section or say that there are no persons that come from the Bielan that are good. I would never say that, because I know the Bielan, and I know the potential in the Bielan. I know that the community is a good community because I've lived there for over 10 years.
Yes, but I born and I raised and I came out about 20 years now. And in that time, while I was living there, everything was good. But it's just that the people who came in recently, right, they're the body... They are the persons who are giving the Bielan a bad name, right? But anyhow, I thank you, and I am glad to know that I have a representative from the Bielan representing the youth.
All right, thank you so very much. This WhatsApper is saying, good morning, sir. What the lady said about applications from certain communities having to change their addresses in order to get jobs, used to occur in the 60s. They had to change their addresses and get jobs. For example, like New Orleans people changed their addresses to Chapman Street and King Street and Hunt Street addresses for their friends just to get a job. So in other words, it's really nothing new. And I can also say that there are a number of people who would have said that the same thing happens with Pinelands and other areas. But one of the things that Roshana was, the point that she really was emphasizing is that there's just some places that now would have a certain stigma, but she wasn't saying that, you know, that people come from there are bad. So please, give a break. She wasn't really, she wasn't saying that at all. Let's take another call. In fact, we've got a number of calls, so let me just take some calls for the time being. This is Rastax Sunday. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi, Sanka.
How are you today, sir?
Good. How are you?
I am well, thank you.
This is Mark Ford here.
Oh, hi. How are you doing?
Not too bad, not too bad. Roshana?
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
You know me, Jaden's daddy and so on.
Yes, I know who you are.
Mm-hmm. Good, good, good. I find it a bit very unfortunate. I've listened to the program from the beginning. The first caller, I think she totally misinterpreted what Roshana was saying. It reminds me, Sanka and Roshana, of the times when you say something about a person's child, and before they examine exactly what you say, they jump on you because it belongs to them, mm-hmm. or the child belongs to them. So I think that she needs to listen more carefully to what Roshana is actually saying. And because Roshana comes from the area, and she's simply saying what I got. My takeaway was that, look, there are certain communities, and I don't think she singled out that particular area. She said certain communities in Barbados where, you know, they're looked upon in a certain way, where people go and apply for a job and that type of thing. and certain changes have to be made. My point, though, I wanted to make. Now, Roshana, I know you from church.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I know you from.
Yeah.
And when I saw Sanka, what happened in that graveyard on TV the other night, I was like, I mean, it stayed with me long after the news. And I'm thinking, what could drive young people? And I say young people, I don't want to say some, because I find we emphasize the some word too much. What I saw was young people doing to desecrate graves. Where is decency taught? I mean, there's no decency for the dead, the family of the dead, this type of thing. There's certain decencies that it seems that these are totally lost on our young people. And the first thing that struck me, as I told my wife at the time, was, listen, these people, where's the role of Sunday school? Don't they send you into Sunday school anymore? You know, listen, my daughter, my wife took my daughter to the junior finals last night. And they came home pretty late, obviously, and when I woke up, my daughter said, "Let's send to school this morning." She said, "Daddy went to sleep really late." I said, "There's Sunday school this morning." That's besides the point. You know, and I find that there seems to be the this doing away with the role that a church plays. The church is not going to walk, come to you all the time. People have to wake up and send their children to Sunday school to learn that apparently these days, like, are right and wrong. I don't, and it is not the only place. I'm not saying it's the only place you can learn right and wrong, because the parents have to teach that. But it seems to have to teach parents now too. What's your comment on that, Roshana?
I think that the methods that we use to socialize our children and to raise our children are very important. I definitely know about the role and the importance of church within the socializing of young people, because I mean, I grew up in the church and I was very active within the church. But we also have to, and as I don't think values have changed in the respect, I hope not, in respect to how we see graveyards and different things. I think that we need to strengthen some of these and go back to some of these socialization mechanisms. So we need to strengthen our school, but go back to church and the role that we see church playing within the lives of a child. For example, there are stories that stick with me to this day, and there are things that stick with me to this day, the Beatitudes and the Golden Rule and commandments, and those different things are things that I see as very important to my life and how I developed. And I think persons might not always see how important they are, how important church is, or specific aspects like Sesame Street even, in shaping the life and how you grow. But I think that we need to really examine these things and the programs and different things that we expose our children to and also our young people to.
You know, one of the things, Sanka and Roshana, I have found looking on as a social observer and a social commentator as well, is that, you know, people say, I've told this to David Ellis, there seems to be an overriding emphasis on entertainment in Barbados. And with that entertainment comes largely a certain behavior, what we see coming from overseas, the parents dropping off, you know, on stage, showing the crack, as they say, you know, and we say, well, that's the way to go, showing your underwear. I mean, this is not just dress. This goes beyond dress to me. You know, a certain, the whole dance hall thing. Now we have the bashment to add to it. And all of that, to me, the important socialization agencies get pushed in the background. There's little emphasis to me, Roshana, in my observation these days, on academia. The whole thing is about entertainment. You know, you get the $80,000 here and the car there, and this is what is shown. And hardly anybody speaks about Carlton Cummins and his achievement with Forbes. You know, and I don't know how we're going to turn it back. But we really need the agencies to say, listen, this life is not just about entertainment, because they get socialized. And look at the song. They sing about rum and drinking. and all of that nonsense.
Okay, but Mr. Ford, and yes. In fact, somebody's even picking you up here on it. So this person is saying, so only values can only be taught in church? Do we no longer have parents who know what is right and wrong and communicate those values to their offspring in word and actions? And that's what the person wrote here.
Right.
The fact about the matter is that there are some people who do not go to church, but they know the difference between right and wrong. And that, to my mind, is what is at stake here. I don't want to bring the religious element in it. We tend to do that all the time when we have these discussions about behavior and whatnot. But the fact about the matter is that it goes deeper than that. In my view, just saying go to church or just saying know about the Bible and that sort of thing doesn't solve.
I didn't say that. No,
I know you didn't say that.
Good.
But other people here are, so that's why. So
again,
I know
what
you. I know
hear.
What people always hear what they want to hear. Always.
Oh,
I mean, how could many people misunderstood what this young lady has been saying about the Bayland? I mean,
exactly.
That shows you. I mentioned about New Orleans, and somebody's here writing about New Orleans and all sorts.
There you go.
Whatnot. So I'm telling me not to focus on areas, and we're really not focusing on areas at all because that's not the issue. The issue that I was dealing with, and I read extensively, was to show the link of where people are actually, who have actually left school, are the ones who are ending up at Dodds. What the statistic there? This is a study done. Is 7 out of 10 inmates, okay, didn't even have qualifications. And so the question that we should be looking at is, why is it that our school system is somehow, where are these people somehow falling through the cracks? And then what mechanism do we have in place to actually capture some of these people after they've fallen through the cracks to mitigate against them going into a life of crime? So that is really where our discussion should be looking at, okay? As well as what we also want to look at is how this level of bad behavior that is taking place, how this is impacting people on a day-to-day basis. Because we have crop over coming up, for example. Well, it's on now, but I mean, we have all these different fets on. And one of the first things that is happening all the time is there's this emphasis on security. There's this emphasis on bad behavior that's taking place after the fets, like the one you were talking about. And there's obviously problems that are taking place in the fets. And we all see these things on social media, the different incidents and whatnot that are totally unbelievable. I saw one up the night before where three women or four women were beating a man outside with a car. And then the police grabbed the man, and took him away. I mean, we see them on boats and on the pleasure boats and everything. We see these videos. So,
Franka, if I may,
yes, go ahead.
You're saying that you don't want to bring the religious aspect into it.
I know. I don't want, because I don't want it to dominate. I don't want it to dominate because
I
know when that starts. Give me a second. When this thing about God and these values and this thing starts and you start going down that line, okay, then immediately it becomes focused on that. And let us face facts, all right? The church does not play as great a role as it should be playing, in my view, but it's not playing as great a role in people's lives on a day-to-day basis. It's just not doing that. That's a different issue, I think, for a different time.
But the reason, I know, I understand that. All I'm saying is, right, I'm not saying we walk about with a bunch of holier-than-thou people, right? The role I think the church played before is that it guided us in a certain direction, and that even if we are not a holier-than-thou person later on, we at least learned something that was called right from wrong. You understand? So therefore, and I also did make the point, it is not the only socialization agent. The where are the parents? I also asked the question, do we have to teach the parents now? And I don't know how do we save people after they have fallen through the cracks? I hear people saying that there's a lost generation out there. I don't know if it's true or not. I really don't.
But sir,
I think there's a lot of people right now we have to save.
One of the things that people need to recognize, and I'm forever an optimist, I guess, but there have been examples. I was speaking to Ezra Allen, the attorney at law, up to a couple of nights ago, and we were discussing a number of things, and we were talking about his days as a student in as a clerk in England, and he was telling me about a gentleman who was an out and out criminal. I mean, he was one of the most wanted men and whatnot in his day, and this guy was then exposed to education while he was serving a 23-year stretch. Okay, he came out of prison, and then he became a lecturer and a writer and a speaker on the whole thing of criminology and sociology and people's behavior and that sort of thing. I made a tremendous contribution thereafter. He was also able to influence people while he was in prison and as he reformed. But the point is that he initially fell through the cracks.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saved because of the programs that were in prison.
Right.
And just let me stop here. Because the next thing we were, and how it came up, the discussion was, I was talking to him about, well, trying to get him on the program, actually. On the same program, that's how the discussion came up. For the younger people who may not have heard of Ezra Allen, he has done some of the major criminal cases in Barbados through the years. And he was telling me about Mark Young, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But you're old enough to remember Mark Young.
Yeah, I know.
And he was telling about Mark Young before Mark Young became, before Mark Young really got full blown into criminal activity. And the fact of the type of individual he was, because he had met him, you know, he had an interaction with him as an attorney. And then he was making the point that at one point, Mark Young was able to change his life, and he was actually trying to, he was selling fruit, he was a vendor, he was trying to make something of his life. Then he was trying to get a license to be a vendor and whatnot, could not get the license, things were really rough, and then he fell back into that life of crime, because there are a lot of things that factors that can stop you, given the regulations that we have in place. When you have a criminal record, these then can be used against you. Okay.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. He was also talking about Winston Hall. The fact that, and it came out in court, the fact that Winston Hall was not the gentleman was shot.
Yeah.
It was Winston Hall who came back and who tried to give the person water and try to comfort the individual as they laid there, you know.
Which is why really he believed that he was not guilty of that, you know.
Because he was always the lookout man. But that's not the point. The point is that, and because I don't want to discuss the actual aspects of the case, but the whole point that Ezra was trying to make was that these guys, the two of them, Mark Young and Winston Hall, yes, they fell through the cracks from an education perspective, but if there was something there, some major program ongoing in prison when they first went in, and some ongoing strategy that policy program that was happening within the society at the time that could help these guys and take them back from the brink, maybe there would have been a different result. And that's the point that he was trying to make to me. And I'm sorry that we haven't heard him as yet, but that's one of the main points, and that's one of the main things we want to try to get over here when we're talking about people who exhibit certain behaviors, right? We have to take a commercial break, but it was great talking to you. Have yourself a great day. I just want to remind everyone that this program to you today is brought to you by the good people at Williams Industries, Inc.
You do not have to be a roofing expert to know that a metal sheet with rust where it is joined That is one reason why the beautiful Permaclad U-Panel and R-Panel roof sheet sold at Williams Metals will outlast other roofing materials. Permaclad, colorclad, and corrugated sheets are cut to the exact length that you will need, up to 40 feet and even longer. That means no joins from ridge to eave. Colorclad sheets come with a factory-painted finish in white, blue, green, red, brown, and yellow, and are fitted with screws for added resistance, tested to withstand high winds up to 130 miles an hour. Get a rail roof supplied at competitive prices. Delivered to you today from Williams Metals. Simply call Williams at Kane Garden St. Thomas, 425-2000, or Lowlands Christchurch, 428-1500.
Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
Welcome back to Brass Tech Sunday. Let's just take a couple of calls first before we go back to Roshana. You're on the air. Good morning. Good morning. You're on the air. All right, take another call. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning, Sanko.
Good morning. How are you?
Hi, I'm fine, thanks. I just wanted to speak about what the young lady was saying regarding the educational system and how things have changed so much, but our system has not. And I am actually speaking from a personal experience I had while my son was at the lodge school. And beating my head, knocking on doors, calling people in the ministry, speaking to your head, guidance counselor, the then principal at the time, you know, telling them what I was seeing with my son. Because here we had a child that did the 11 plus, was doing exceptionally well in primary school, did very well, got into law school, and then he was lost. And the thing is, I finally discovered how he learned, because I had to do personal research on myself to find out how my child learns. My child does not learn by you lecturing to him. But we have this way, we stay up and we lecture to the children. Then at farm level meetings, people complaining to me, saying to me, well, he phases out. He's just there. He does not absorb himself in the class. As I said, I did some research and I found out that he's one of these people that actually will learn with his hands, which I eventually got him in some classes that he was, you know, doing pretty well in the agricultural science and the chemistry, anything that was hands-on, he did very well in. The unfortunate thing is that the hands-on subjects were only about four of them, which he did well. The other subjects, he failed. So here I am, trying now to get him to bring up these subjects, because the schools also have this policy that if you don't perform by a certain time, they'll put you out. So we have the problem now where you have 16-year-olds that are otherwise not bad-behaved children but did not meet, say, 75% of the pass rate for school to get back into school, and they put you out. I think there's some fancy word they call it, but my son was asked to leave law school. I was very upset, annoyed, everything, because it wasn't a case of bad behavior. It was a case of the child was not performing in the other subject as well as he was in the ones that he was very good at. The thing is for this, especially as a parent, is if you do not have strong parents like myself that did not lay down and play dead, my son probably would have become another statistic. Because some of his friends also ended up not going back to school at 16 years old. I don't see why a child at 16 years old has to be out of a school. The mere fact is that if the child got to your school, it means that there is something there. The child is not stupid. No child is stupid. But we have this system now. We are not worrying our heads with you. If you don't do what we want, we're putting you on the road. But as I said, thank God for me. And I decided I'm not going to, you know, end this here. I tried for the Polytechnic, although I would have got the documents pretty late. And he did not get to do the program that he wanted to. And I said, no, you're not staying home for a year either. I paid for a year for him to go and do some commercial stuff and stuff like that. Keeping his brain occupied. Exactly. Mm-hmm. We applied this year. And the thing is, his whole thing has never changed from the one subject that he wanted to do, which is agricultural science. He got into the program at the Polytechnic, and he's going to pursue that now. But if I was, as I said, Sanka, if it was one of his parents that say, oh, well, you got to look for some work, I probably might have been at the court, or my child will probably be on the road because he has no skills, he has no certificates, nothing, so there's no job. I probably might be saying I'm not going to take any money, like how some people say, and pay for classes which were free to give you anything. So here we have these problems. Here we have a lot of 16-year-old males and females, and he has a lot of friends that are like that. But he is fortunate, as I said, because I decided that he is not going to be a statistic. Mm-hmm. If it meant that I would not eat, go anywhere, do my hair, my nails, nothing, I was determined that he was going to be somebody. And that is the problem that we have.
Yeah.
The schools failing our children because they want them out. They just want them out. They can't be bothered. They're not, you know, like changing. There's so many new ways of teaching children now. And we just stuck in this rut. And then complaining because the children are bored. I have another son now. Every single comment about him is that he is restless. And I decided one day, it's not my child that's restless, you know. You haven't found a way to reach my child.
And I think that's it, you know. I think the important thing has to be having a school system. I'm not saying that a school system is going to be able to get everybody. I think any system that gets everybody is perfect. I think that's wonderful. And I think that's what you're reaching for. But we need a school system that is able, to a great extent, to be able to see a child and do that research or that early intervention, whether they may have a learning problem, like dyslexia or ADHD or any of those on the spectrum, and be able to teach them in a way that suits them and reaches their potential, and have a child who may learn differently, who may not be visual but maybe auditory, and be able to reach them as well and find ways to tap into the potential that we have. Because I strongly believe that when you have a child who isn't being reached, a lot of times that manifests itself in that class, what we call the class clown or the troublemaker, and then we lose them. And what we do as a reaction, instead of seeking to bring them back in, we kind of just let them go and say, this child bad. And that cannot be the case. That cannot be the way, because what we lose is valuable potential. Countries work best when everybody can contribute to their best. And I think that is what we lose. And I've never understood how a child can go through the entire school system and leave with nothing, or not be able to find one skill or talent that they can use. And if a child leaves not knowing what they can do or what they're best suited for, we have failed them, not only as a school, but as a society. And I think we also need to take into account that every parent will not be the world's best parent. Every parent will not be able to provide children with certain things. That mother was able to reach out and
find it. Actually, she did a wonderful job.
Right. So she...
And she should be commended for doing that job, because it is that a level of attention that ensures that will make the difference between her son's success and failure.
Definitely. But something I also think, that every parent can't do that. And I think that's where the other agents need to come in as
yes,
well.
Yes, but this young lady made a point just now. This parent made a point just now that I thought was very significant. She says, if it means that I couldn't do my nails, I can get my hair do, et cetera, he had to achieve something. And that is significant. No, you laugh. I'm very, very serious. Because that point to me makes that she in other words, she was prepared to make every sacrifice, however basic it was, to ensure the success of her son. Let's take another call. You are on the air. Good morning. Good morning. Yes, 11:59. Good morning.
Good morning, Rishana. You said your name is?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. And Mr. Price.
Good morning, sir.
If Mr. Johnson is there, he's saying to him also. Listen, I understand what you said from the inception and how you were trying to explain about the different areas where, you know, whatever would have transpired, and how people are looking at it. You are right. When you all even discuss the part about changing addresses to get a job, I know that for a fact. It has happened.